Hello and welcome to Saver, production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about the cocktail culture of Oahu.
Which is surprisingly appropriate because for no reason known to us, our office is having a little cocktail hour complete with Malibu rum.
Sure.
A very fruity.
It's very
tropical rum.
Tropical.
Yes. For what is
coconut.
Pretty much the first day of like real fall here in Atlanta. It's actually chilly outside.
Yeah.
So there, of course, Malibu.
Malibu, sure. Well, you know, you're trying to bring back the sweet memory of summer.
Which... so fleeting. So gone for so long. I can't wait to investigate what they're up to.
I'm excited to find out. But I'm also excited to talk about all of the lovely things that we experienced while we were out on Oahu and then on Maui for a day or two.
Yeah, you know, because we did have some amazing, amazing drinks.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And also, as always with these episodes, there is no sponsorship to be had.
Nope.
Just good times.
Yeah. We just enjoyed things. We're going to tell you about some of them. Also... yep.
Drink responsibly.
Yay. Do that thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that brings us to our question.
Sure.
Cocktails in Hawaii. What are they?
Well, some people like cocktails, and some of those people are sometimes in Hawaii.
That simple, huh?
We should specify that we did only visit Oahu during the business part of our trip, and we were on Maui for – Annie and I had a vacation.
Still shocked.
Yeah, I know, right?
Still not sure.
for about 2 days on Maui. But, yes, the bulk of our cocktail experience was in Honolulu, which is, of course, the state capital and contains several neighborhoods that are serious tourist destinations.
Oh, yeah. Like we briefly mentioned in our Lily Koi episode, cocktail culture on Oahu has largely been shaped by tourism because, again, tourism is and has been a huge part of Hawaii's economy. And like we mentioned in our Oahu intro episode, turning Hawaii into a tourist destination, or I suppose one that tourists knew about and would long to visit, was a concentrated campaign effort from a handful of American and European business people launched in the early 1900s.
And one man had a pretty big impact in shaping Hawaii's cocktail world, Ernest Raymond Beaumont Nat, better known as Don Beach, whose name you might recognize from our Mai Tai episode or perhaps from one of the Don the Beachcomber properties. Beach often gets credit for introducing the United States to the concept of a tiki bar when his first restaurant and bar opened in 1934 near Hollywood, California. He had done a lot of traveling in the South Pacific and the Caribbean. Legend has it that he was a rum bootlegger during Prohibition, and he wanted to recreate some of the things that he experienced in the mainland United States with his own take.
Mm-hmm.
After Prohibition, American bourbon makers had to start their businesses all over again. So bourbon was rare and expensive, but imported rum was plentiful and cheap. Also, a method to produce high-quality canned pineapple juice had just been invented by the Hawaiian Pineapple Company, started by one James Dole. Yes, that Dole. Their aggressive marketing had made this tropical fruit a fad on the American mainland.
One of these days, we have to do an episode on Prohibition because I feel like in every
episode,
especially the alcohol ones, of course, it comes up. I'm like, wow, it really did.
But, like, weirdly enough, a lot of other ones, too.
I know.
It's one like day. It was a big thing.
another shocking thing already. Celebrities loved Don the Beachcomber, which, of course, meant everyone else wanted to see what all the fuss was about. While Beach was in Europe in World War II, his wife, Cora Irene Sund, also known as Sunny, took over the Don the Beachcomber enterprise, growing it to 16 locations. Soon after Beach returned... they divorced, and Sun kept the enterprise and company name in the United States.
So, in 1948, Beach went to Hawaii and, relying heavily on his own personal source material, opened a tiki restaurant in Waikiki, which is a neighborhood in Honolulu that had already been a popular surfing and beach-going area for a few decades. And as those aforementioned American and European business dudes drummed up tourism interest in Hawaii, some serious civil and environmental engineering efforts were put into making Waikiki, this 1 square mile stretch of beach and surrounding area, really resort-friendly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Don erected a Polynesian village around his restaurant and called it the International Marketplace, which I imagine was very Disney-esque.
Mm-hmm.
At its peak, this marketplace boasted 50 bars, restaurants, and clubs, 3 owned by beach and 1 owned by famous swimmer and surfer Duke Kahanamoku, called Duke Kahanamoku's Supper Club. It featured a drink called Duke's Pearl, where every 5th drink came with a real pearl as garnish.
Huh.
I wonder if it was, like, every 5th drink they made or every 5th drink you had. I wasn't clear on that, so if anyone knows,
yeah,
right in. Meanwhile, rival Trader Vic's, which had also gotten its start in 1934, opened in Honolulu in 1941, and it was eventually their Mai Tai, which helped solidify that drink as the king of tiki.
Their Mai Tai, by the way, is a mix of usually 2 rums, orange curacao, lime juice, simple syrup, and orgeat, which is typically a sweet almond syrup or liqueur.
And eventually, with the influx of tourists, this became the drink of Hawaii. Cocktail historian Jeff Berry wrote of the Mai Tai that it was less a drink than a symbol of your Hawaiian holiday, either the one you'd taken or the one you aspired to take. It was paradise in a glass. Because after World War II, soldiers returning from war wanted to recapture the good stuff from Hawaii and the South Pacific, and the post-war economy meant more people had disposable income to spend on vacations. These things helped, too. Hawaiian statehood in 1959 made it even more popular a destination for mainland Americans. Throughout the 60s, more and more tiki restaurants and bars opened until the tiki bubble burst in the 1970s. It's only in the past decade or so that it's experienced a resurgence here on the mainland, but its legacy never left Hawaii, particularly when it comes to what visitors expect to drink while they're there.
Yeah. And okay, so we met up with a number of humans in the drink industry on Oahu. One of them, Chandra Lam Licariello, who's the director of mixology for Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits, took us on a Mai Tai tour.
Yes, this was like our first interview we did we were there.
Yeah, it was, okay, so it was wild. And along the way, we talked a lot about the island's drink culture.
Is the cocktail culture around Hawaii in general mostly resort-driven, or are there, like, pockets of other cultures, of drinking cultures?
There definitely is. So there's a huge Asian assimilation to just, like, cuisine and food and drink. So if you go to a lot of, like, the izakayas or ramen bars or sushi places that we're so known for, you're going to see a lot of, like, sake and shochu consumed. And then there's a lot of Chinese and Vietnamese and Korean. Any Asian you can think of is here. It's like a melting pot of all these different Asian cultures. So there's different ways of drinking at each of those establishments as well. But because we're so tourist-driven in Hawaii, a lot of the alcohol consumption happens at hotels and resorts. And that's just kind of the way it is because of we're so tourist-driven. I am born and raised in Hawaii, and the cocktail scene out here has really, really evolved and changed over the years. When I first started bartending, it was kind of more about speed, getting the drinks out as fast as possible. People weren't really paying attention to the ingredients that went into the glass as much as how much money can we make. The type of spirits were maybe not the best quality as well, but there's a lot more attention that's paid to that now. And there's some craft bars that are popping up all around town that are really elevating our beverage scene. And you're gonna go and see some of them today and tomorrow, so you'll be able to see what I mean about that. But especially in hotels, like, they've gone from not using any fresh juices to using all fresh juice programs. So it's really, really come a long way.
This parallels what's been happening with mixed drinks on the mainland. We've talked in countless episodes about the dark ages of cocktails, aka the 1980s into the 1990s, wherein most everyone was cutting corners by using prepackaged ingredients, leading to lots of drinks that tasted sweet and kind of flat and kind of neon. And yes, neon is a flavor.
Yeah, I can taste it in my It's not great, but sometimes it has a place.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that place for a lot of us is the vacation place.
Uh-huh. The beach vacation.
Right. Because there is definitely a vacation mindset when it comes to going to the beach and drinking by the beach. And the things we want in our hand are usually something that's fruity and light, possibly frozen, bedecked with a cocktail umbrella.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like, you know, stuff you wouldn't get at other places.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I'm going to go to a bar here. Not always. Be like, get me your biggest cocktail umbrella bedecked brightest drink, please. It's just not.
It's not the same.
Exactly. And since, as Chandra says, a lot of drinking is happening at hotels and resorts, the incentive was more about speed and volume, which hasn't helped Hawaii's reputation when it comes to quality cocktails. One of the other people we talked with was Dave Newman of Pint and Jigger and Harry's Hardware Emporium, two well-known and well-loved bars on Oahu. Dave is one of the bartenders at the forefront of Hawaii's craft cocktail movement.
Unfortunately, the reputation for cocktails in Hawaii is going to remain very poor because there's a time and a place to drink everything. It doesn't make sense for the hotels that are in Waikiki to pump out craft cocktails for people sitting next to the pool. My guilty pleasure when I go off island is to sit next to the pool and have a pina colada. Like, that will make me feel like I'm on vacation. And it took me a long time to wrap my head around that. I would have guests come in to Nobu and be like, hey, what do you normally drink at home? I'm a single malt scotch drinker. And I start listing them off, like, you know, what area do you like? And they're like looking around and I'm like, oh, are you looking for something? Like, oh, do you have a blender back there? And, you know, at first it was just facepalm. I'm like, but I get it. Like, you, when you go on vacation, you want to do things a little differently to make yourself feel like you're on vacation. So it makes a little bit more sense. But I think that's going to be the reputation that Hawaii has for cocktails because that's what the majority of people see. And it makes me incredibly sad when we'll have a guest come in here and be like, oh, when are you leaving? And they're like, tomorrow. And then I ask them what they've ate and drank. And they're like, we've never left Waikiki. And I feel really bad because we actually have an amazing food and drink scene. You just got to, you know, put a little bit of effort into finding it.
Waikiki is where all the big resorts are in Honolulu, and most of the high-end retail and almost all of the big chains, like Hard Rock Cafe and Cheesecake Factory and all that. I couldn't find very recent statistic for just Waikiki, but as of 2003, according to the Hawaii Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism, Waikiki accounted for 45% of the entire state's visitors.
Wow.
1 mile square.
Yeah.
Huh. Also, 8% of the state's gross domestic product and 11% of civilian jobs in the state. Wild.
Yeah.
Okay, so there is some great stuff mixed in there as well. You know, it's not all Cheesecake Factory. No offense to anyone who really loves Cheesecake Factory. You do you. You know, our first meal was at this ritzy hotel restaurant, and it was so lovely.
Oh, yeah.
But it's definitely very carefully packaged for tourists, mostly mainland American and Japanese tourists. And, you know, if that's what you're there for, then go get it. Again, not going to hate on your Cheesecake Factory obsession. but when you venture outside of that square mile, you start to see what the people who live on Oahu, who are from there or who have made it their home, what they love about it and what they've built.
I've spent a lot of time in other bar communities, and I've never seen a community as tight-knit as Hawaii. And we have the reputation with Aloha and everybody being friendly, but the amount of help that we give to other people and they give to us and the camaraderie is unbelievable. I gave you a list of probably 40 spots to check out, and guaranteed you go in there and they're going to give you a list of 39 other ones. So it's pretty spectacular. And that goes just beyond sharing ingredients or if you run out of something, it goes well beyond that as far as like, just helping each other out. It's really, really pretty amazing. I've lived in a lot of different places, San Francisco, New York, Spain, Honduras, Los Angeles. This is the one place where I go on vacation and you're never like, oh darn, I gotta go back to Hawaii. Like, it's the best place ever to come home to. It's a really special place. I had a really small family, and I think that was part of the thing that attracted me most to Hawaii when I visited when I was younger. Was everybody's an extended family. If you talk to anybody, it's an auntie or an uncle. Like, you don't even know that person. They're your aunt or your uncle. It's pretty cool. I think we touched on a little bit, but I just think letting people know that if you do find yourself in Hawaii, put a little bit of effort to getting off of the beaten path, and you'll be incredibly, incredibly surprised and hopefully happy with the quality of cocktails and food. This is a really, really special place, and it takes a little bit of effort to find that, but it's well worth it.
We interviewed Dave at Harry's Hardware Emporium, a speakeasy-style bar. On the outside, it appears to be a hardware emporium. Uh-huh. I was totally like, oh, I could go in there and buy some tools if I needed.
Hardware store right there, convenient, next to the bar we're going to. And then I was like, oh.
I see. That's the name. That's where it comes from. But on the inside is this beautiful, dim, swanky space with kind of eccentric flourish. If you look around, there's like, oh, hey, look at that. One of the first things we all noticed walking in was a large Folgers coffee canister with one of those, I can't remember if it was sunglasses or like disguise glasses with the nose and the mustache.
I'm not sure. Either way, it was decked out.
Yeah, it had some glasses. And Dave immediately had drinks for us to try. Mm-hmm. And after the interview was over, we got to stay to try some of the drinks. I'm very glad for that.
Oh, yes.
We got a drink that had a sphere of ice made out of coffee called Never Ending Story.
Yeah, because they would refill the cocktail part of the drink for as long as the ice cube lasted.
Right. Yeah, we got it for the table because, of course.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. table cocktail.
You've got to have one. And then I got a fortune cookie drink, and it turns out that Folgers can was filled with house-made cookies with fortunes like, your drink will be made with mezcal. Your drink will be a reference to a song. Things like that.
Yeah. Oof.
Yeah, and super producer Andrew got a take on the traditional Japanese highball that was carbonated whiskey.
As of 2017, almost 2 million of Hawaii's 9 million yearly visitors came from Japan. So, yeah, especially in the touristy areas, there's a huge focus on Japanese whiskeys and other whiskeys. Whiskey is super posh in Japan lately. And on drinks that play on flavors and ingredients from Japan. Lots of yuzu, wasabi, shiso leaf, stuff like that. I had at least 4 cocktails that incorporated shiso. It was so delightful. That carbonated whiskey that Andrew ordered was one of the things that Dave talked about.
We have such a huge influence from the Japanese culture here. And the highball is just like the drink in Japan. And it seems such a simple thing. You're going to get a good Japanese whiskey and a soda water and combine those two things. But being dorky bartenders, we will sit around and argue forever what the best combination of that is. We'll talk about, oh, should you use Topo Chico? No, it's too much minerality in the water. All like everything. We're dorks. So we figured out a way over here at Harry's to totally eliminate that, and we call it the ultimate highball. We take an amazing Japanese whiskey, a little bit of a saline solution, because there's not a lot of minerality at all in the water in Hawaii. It's very soft. Mm-hmm. So just a couple dashes of that. We dilute that a little bit, and then we carbonate the entire thing. Uh-huh. So you are not drinking a traditional highball. You're drinking carbonated whiskey. So for our Japanese guests, it just blows their mind. So that kind of stuff is just super fun for us.
And speaking of super producer Andrew, Dave said he liked that it was pretty easy to figure out how to get into his speakeasy type bar, but not so easy to find the way out. I imagine it's a form of entertainment.
Him and the other bartenders,
yes.
Yeah.
He was a bit of a trickster, we've discussed.
Uh-huh.
And especially once you've got a few drinks in you, might have some trouble finding the way out. So he said this in our interview. We have a couple of drinks, and then super producer Andrew fell prey to the trap, the very trap that we had been warned about. It's like a secret bookcase deal, and once you figure that part out, you're in a hallway that totally makes you feel like you're in the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And then the other door leads you outside, so it's pretty hilarious. Sorry, super producer Andrew.
Yeah. And in endearing. It
yes.
Was, yes.
Yes. I'm sure the same thing would have happened to me.
Oh, gosh.
Absolutely positive.
Yeah. But other than tricking us,
yes.
They do some pretty cool stuff there, like sous vide cocktails.
Yeah. So I had a conversation with a couple friends about the difference between why scotch ages more slowly versus bourbon. It came a lot down to climate and and whatnot. And so I wanted to see if it would be possible to speed up that barrel aging process. And I was working at Nobu at the time, had access to all sorts of equipment. And we had a couple of old oak staves from a used Jack Daniel's barrel. And we chopped those up and started experimenting with sous vide cocktails. I ended up taking the whole thing home and working on it for about a week. And at one point, I just sat down on the floor in my kitchen and started laughing because it was ridiculously good.
I would say that sous vide in general is a little bit ridiculous. Yes. So, that but you made it work. It's on the menu. People like it.
It's on the menu. It's definitely one of our most popular cocktails. It's landed in the press a few times. So it was the only way I was getting into Popular Mechanics.
But one thing we did not have there was a Mai Tai. Yes, we mentioned the Cocktails Association with Hawaii and our Mai Tai tour, and we will get into that right after we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, yes, the Mai Tai. You can see our Mai Tai episode for the complete history, mm-hmm. including the heated battle over who invented it. I love that almost everyone we talked to about the Mai Tai was uh-huh. like, we both know who invented it, but we won't say. uh-huh. They wouldn't say it on mic.
I know. It was really delightful. I was kind of needling them, too, because yeah. I have a strong opinion about which is better.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, everyone was like, oh, I think we all know.
Yeah, they were. I loved it so much. Anyway, Trader Vic Bergeron once said, quote, a lot of bastards all over the country have copied it and copyrighted it and claimed it for their own. I hope they get the bucks. It was a very serious debate.
It was.
There was a lot of good quotes like that. So definitely yeah. if you missed that episode,
check it out.
But at any rate, we did want to touch on it here because it is such a huge part of Hawaii's cocktail scene, particularly when we're talking about tourism. And, yeah, we went on a Mai Tai tour, so kind of have to talk about it. Chandra was our tour leader.
And, okay, we should set the scene a little
yes.
bit because, yeah, our first stop on this Mai Tai tour was at the Royal Hawaiian, which is a famous hotel and resort on the beach in Waikiki. And the bar we went to was on the beach. This was our first interview. It was such a lovely day.
It was.
We were just going like, oh, this is literal paradise. The bar was spectacular. The bartender was super friendly. There were regulars there that were really excited about what we were doing.
We got to conduct this interview with Mai Tais in hand.
We did.
And it resulted in one of my favorite behind-the-scenes pictures we've ever taken, work photo with our super producers and their recording equipment, colorful Mai Tais, sunglasses on.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best.
And it was just, this wasn't a posed photo.
Nope.
They were just doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how we were conducting this interview. I still don't know how we wound up in Hawaii, it seems wild to me.
I know. Looking back on it, I keep having moments. How did this happen?
But it did.
Yes. And anyway, here is Chandra.
So Hawaii is absolutely known for the Mai Tai. It is a king cocktail in Hawaii. It's absolutely the most popular cocktail at any hotel or resort that you go to. Even if you don't go to hotels and resorts, at restaurants, it's still the most popular cocktail as well. And it was actually the Royal Hawaiian that first started serving Mai Tais in Hawaii. So they changed it and they did their own rendition of the Mai Tai. And that's why we're here starting the tour here.
What is special about this particular Mai Tai?
So the original Royal Hawaiian Mai Tai, they basically took the Trader Vic's recipe, which is the original 1944 recipe, which is just two different rums, curacao, orgeat, and lime, and they made it a little juicier, a little fruitier, a little more tropical forward. So they added like pineapple and orange juice. They started doing that dark rum float that is iconic on the Mai Tai now, where the 44 actually never had that float. It was all incorporated together. So that is their Royal Hawaiian Mai Tai. What you're having, Annie, is their Ali'i Mai Tai. So Ali'i means royalty in Hawaiian. And this is a $35 Mai Tai on their menu. So it's definitely one that's a little more special. They use really special ingredients in it, fresh muddled pineapple instead of juice. They use two different types of rum, one being Bacardi Diaz, which is an aged rum from Puerto Rico, and then also the Cojana Cojo, which is very, very special and very expensive and limited. So the Cojo that's in your glass is that Cojana rum that's aged in used bourbon barrels. So it has a richness to it, and it's beautiful.
Kyle Rutner over at Cojana Rum described the drink like this.
It's still classically styled. I mean, a Mai Tai is just a sour. Let's be honest. It's a sour that has, like, really sexy edges. Yep. So it's like, do your base. Well, there's three rums in that base. That's super cool. So now it's going to have a lot of complexity there. Its sweetener is essentially a trio of things, right? You've got something orange, you've got something nutty, and you've got something actually really sweet. So you've got orgeat, you've got curacao, and you've probably got simple syrup in there, frankly, to stretch the drink. And then you've got lime juice and whatever other kind of like tart citrus juice you'd want, pineapple, whatnot. So it's just a sour drink, but it's done with this like such aplomb that it's like it's really well sort of positioned to make you extra freaking happy. And it does. So that's what that drink is.
Oh, it is my favorite. Yeah, at the Royal Hawaiian, because I can't have pineapple, I had that classic original made without the juices.
So you have the 44 Mai Tai. So this is the original Trader Vic's recipe. There's two different recipes, and they both compete to who created the Mai Tai. There's Don the Beachcomber, and there's Trader Vic. So you have the Trader Vic version. This is my personal favorite. The reason I like this version is it's very rum forward. So the original recipe was an aged overproof rum, an agricole rum, curacao, orgeat, and fresh pressed lime. And that's it. Like, there's no pineapple, orange, guava, grenadine. And sometimes when you walk down the strip in Waikiki, you'll see all these different colorful Mai Tais, and there's guava in it or a grenadine drizzle. But that's really not the true Mai Tai. This is the true version of it. So it's very pure in its form. It's more refreshing, I would say, but also spirit forward. So it's definitely for, like, more the rum aficionado.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And it definitely does not mask the flavor of the rum as some of those more gussied up versions can. And it will definitely knock you on your butt.
Oh, yeah. So that was round one.
Uh-huh.
We talked about a little of the drink we had for round two and its marvelous foam in our Lily Koi passion fruit episode. But it was at Merriman's, a restaurant a little outside of the Waikiki district in Honolulu.
Not very far outside. It's just like one little area over in Ala Moana. And yeah, so we were sitting outside on their breezy patio. It was a couple streets in from a small private harbor. The building it's in has one of those pools with a glass bottom and built so it hangs out over the street.
And also, you and Dylan ran away playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
And I was like, come back.
There was an Aerodactyl and I needed one.
Of course. My apologies.
Anyway, yes, here's Chandra again.
So we are on our second Mai Tai tour stop. Could you tell me a little bit about this establishment and this drink that we were drinking?
Yeah, so Merriman's first started on the island of Hawaii, in Waimea. That was their first location. And Peter Merriman has always been really dedicated to farm-to-table, sourcing all local. I know that in a lot of the restaurants, they don't even have, like, freezers. The freezer is only for, like, ice cream.
Oh, wow.
They don't, like, use anything, like, frozen. They try to go as fresh as possible and really just respecting the farms around them and seasonality and things like that. So the Mai Tai that you're having is also using local rums, of course. So this is from Old Lahaina Rum Distillery, and this is made in Pa'ia in Maui. So it's a small little, like, surf town. And the distiller built his distillery inside of the last remaining sugar mill on Maui. So if you, like, walk up to it, if you drive up to it and you look at it, you're like, what, where am I? This is like a ghost town. Like, all I see is this dilapidated, like, old building. It looks like it's, like, in shambles, like, ready to fall apart. But then you walk inside and it's like a brand new, like, spanking clean, like, facility. So he actually built a new facility inside that old sugar mill to preserve the historic nature of the building.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful.
father and son team. They do everything like by hand. They get all their sugar, their molasses from a Maui grade beer hire, and that's what the rum is that's used in the Merriman's Mai Tai and the Monkey Pod Mai Tai, I should say.
Wow, we passed by that place while we were on Maui. Oh, gorgeous, sort of spooky looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway.
There's a foam on top of this one. That's a lily koi.
Yes, it's a honey lily koi foam.
Uh-huh.
So lily koi just is passion fruit.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Excellent. Cool.
Passion fruit and then local honey and some egg white, a little bit of citrus. And they just put it in like a ISI Profi whip in order to create that nice fluffy texture.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's such a wonderful bright note in addition to like it's not overly sweet.
Right.
But yeah, it's got a really good tart. Yeah. Passion fruit. And this orgeat is macadamia nut. Yeah.
Yes, it's a house-made orgeat. So they, you know, orgeat is not a hard thing to do, but it's a painstaking process. So they're basically just grinding up those macadamia nuts and getting all of those beautiful oils out of them, soaking them in the water, straining it out, doing it again over and over. So you get that milky creaminess that the oils come out of the nuts. And then you add sugar to it and maybe a little bit of orange blossom water for some floral note. And you have that beautiful, rich, creamy texture that blends perfectly with the bright citrus notes in the Mai Tai.
Mmm, it really did. But that wasn't last stop on our tour.
Nope.
We had one more. We wound up having to reschedule it for another time and date, which was probably a good thing because we hadn't had lunch yet.
Nope.
But it's also how it wound up being the latest interview we've ever scheduled, 10:30 p.m., the night before the earliest interview we've ever scheduled, 6:30 a.m.
But yes, since Chandra couldn't come with us, she gave us an idea of what to expect.
So the next stop you're going to be taking on this Mai Tai tour later on is going to be at Bar Leather Apron.
Uh-huh.
And so that Mai Tai is actually an award-winning Mai Tai. So every year there's a contest at the Royal Kona Hotel, and the winner gets $10,000 for their Mai Tai. Runner-up, $7,500, third place, $5,000. So it's quite a large cash purse, and it's quite an honor to win this prize. So Justin won with that Mai Tai maybe 4 years ago, and you'll see like how special it is. It's amazing. He actually carved out his own little like wooden tiki to encapsulate the drink in. So the drink goes into this tiki, you cover it, and then he has a portal for the smoke to go through. So the smoke comes through the tiki's eyes and mouth, and you can smell it, and then he lifts it up, and it just fills the room with smoke.
Wow.
And he hand-carved like 6 of these for that contest. And so if he didn't win, everyone was going to be like, this contest is BS, you know, if he didn't win. Like, it was like hands down. So I've seen, I'm a part of that Mai Tai contest, just helping to organize it. And so I get to see all these recipes every year, and it's amazing what these bartenders come up with, their creativity. I mean, they use things like activated charcoal to like create like the different color contrast with like maybe the use of strawberry and guava, and then using activated charcoal so it looks like a volcano. I mean, they all like will make their own like bitters or tinctures or syrups, and maybe not do like an orgeat, but do a totally different syrup or introduce spice into it or smoke or freeze it into the ice sphere and then like have it, you know, come out of the ice sphere. I've seen blended versions. So there's so many different ways to like make it your own. How true it is to the original recipe, maybe not so much, but we want to let their creative juices flow. So
yeah.
You can't like stifle that.
Those entries are anything like Justin's. I guarantee you that they are spectacular in both showmanship and just, you know, as like tasty drinks.
Mm-hmm.
But I love it. A yearly Mai Tai competition.
You should get invited to go.
I should, you know.
The face of the Mai Tai.
Mascot. I will totally wear stupid outfits. Y'all get in touch with me.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I am so in for tasting literally every one of them that doesn't involve pineapple.
Which is probably good. That way you won't get too drunk.
Right.
Yeah.
See, it's a good self-limiter.
There we go.
Anyway, I love this kind of thing. It's one of the examples of how the locals lean into these touristy aspects of Oahu, but also make it just fiercely their own. But okay, so Bar Leather Apron. Mm-hmm. This place is in downtown Honolulu, inside an office building that has a bit of like a mall on the first floor. So like you go into this financial center and you get really confused and you have a bemused guard point you in the right direction. And then you go up this short flight of stairs and then suddenly you're in this tiny bar that's all dark woods and low ceilings and dim lighting. And we meet Justin, and he prepares this drink for us. And it is so dramatic and delightful. The smoke pours out of the tiki's mouth and nose. It's this whole sensory experience.
After taking plenty of pictures and Instagram photos, we went into a sort of speakeasy within a speakeasy room and asked Justin about this creation.
The Mai Tai we feature now is called the Eho Opala Mai Tai. So the name loosely translates in Hawaiian to like to wind down or finish. Truth be told, the cocktail was created, like there's a rum sponsor for the event, obviously, for like a competition. And I like to tie in the story of everything together. So it's like very like interactive as far as like, you know, you see it, you hear it, you know, you experience it. It's beyond just tasting it and like judging it off of that. So you're kind of, you know, you're kind of, as far as judging goes, you're like almost like starting to score points before you even taste it. That's really like not a, there's no clear definition of what that means. Now they like, they've said like almond syrup, like orgeat, you know, stuff. So what I did is I took four flavors and those four flavors, I wanted them to be very complementary to each other. And the flavors I wanted to feature licorice, vanilla, coconut, and raisin. So I found different ways to incorporate each of those things into the ingredients. But at the same time, kind of keeping true to some of the classic Mai Tais. Mm-hmm. You know, there's many first Mai Tais. So classically, lime juice, rum, and orgeat, which is an almond syrup. Those are the three things that I used in the Mai Tai here. There's a few other ingredients depending on what your version of a Mai Tai is. And I just kind of replaced those. So coconut water, agave, vanilla, and honey. That's all another ingredient. And I've actually infused one of the rums with raisin. And the raisin gives it kind of like a earthy note. And then we've added allspice to the orgeat, which is an almond syrup. The allspice kind of works well with the raisin and the coconut and all those other flavors. So the whole point was like, you kind of get the Mai Tai up front, but like while you're tasting it, you know, in the back end, I get the raisin. Oh, I get, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the inspiration comes from many places. Obviously the tiki and how it is like affiliated with the Mai Tai. The actual tikis that I used were like, when you start going down the rabbit hole, this is where you end up. But I use like actual like references of tikis from the Big Island near Kealakekua Bay, which is like where Captain Cook came in. You know, and the story can literally just go on and on and on. But that's how like foolproof I want to make it.
Yeah.
So if I'm asked a question about it, I can be like, well, this tiki, it was inspired from so and so, and goes back to here, did, you know what I mean? It's just like, holy crap. Because it becomes more than a drink.
We also asked about the overall perception of Hawaii's cocktail culture and how it's changing.
It goes back to that craft and volume thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, places, hotels want to serve it to thousands of people, where they have to figure out a way to do that, you know, without kind of losing what it is. But at the same time, since the Mai Tai has been created, it's kind of started losing what it was as it went on.
Yeah.
So it becomes this like tropical, like they serve it on the airplane, you know, on Hawaiian Airlines when you're coming in, which I've actually talked to them about, because it's terrible that the first thing they're getting is a really bad version of of a Mai Tai.
Like a sour mix and like one kind of bad rum and like.
Yeah, everything comes out of like two bottles.
Oh, sure.
Sometimes one. And it's like, what?
Oh, no.
So, yeah, it's a, like the classic Mai Tai, like the version I enjoy the most, you know, it's pretty spirit forward. You know, it has like that tart element, there's a sweetness, it's really balanced, but it's been turned into something a little different. That's not to say that people haven't been doing classic versions of it at the same time.
Absolutely.
Because with the resurgence of the cocktail culture and just like locally here, people starting to get more involved, like, okay, what is the actual Mai Tai?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Then you get places serving the original Mai Tai, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's, you know, then someone comes in, they're like,
that's not like the Mai Tai I had on the airplane. You can be like, hey, this is whatever. You can tell them their story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it just changes one person and then they go.
Yeah.
Changing the world one cocktail at a time. We do have some more for you listeners, but first we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. Another drink that Hawaii, by which we mean Waikiki, is infamous for is the Blue Hawaii. So, of course, we asked Chandra about it and its creator, Harry.
So, Harry Yee, actually, we just celebrated the 100th anniversary of the Blue Hawaii. I think it was last year.
Wow.
We had a competition with Grey Goose and Bacardi. And who could create this new version of the Blue Hawaii to honor Harry Yee. And he was actually one of the judges in this contest, which was really, really cool.
Oh.
So what happened was the Bowls Company, they came out with this new curacao that was blue, and it was, you know, no one really knew what to do with it. So they gave it to Harry to, like, kind of play around with. And he's like, oh, I'll just try and put some things together. And everyone loved it, I think, because the color was so electrifying. He garnished it with an orchid. He was the very first one to use an orchid as a garnish, too. So he's the one that started that trend as well. But he was remained bartending at the Hilton Wine Village up until maybe 20 years ago. Like,
oh,
he
wow.
bartended till he was, like, 80 years old.
Oh.
Crazy. I mean, so he supported all of his family. All of his kids went to college
wow.
and everything on his bartender's salary. And you can still go and have a Blue Hawaii at where it originated at the Hilton Hawaiian Village today.
He's also the very first one to use a paper umbrella as a garnish.
Mm-hmm.
In interviews, he has said that when he first started bartending, people would request a, quote, Hawaiian drink. So he made something up. But I guess that brings us to another question.
Who?
Blue Hawaii. What is it?
Well, a Blue Hawaii is a cocktail made from equal parts vodka and light rum, plus pineapple juice, sour mix, and that blue curacao, either served over crushed ice or blended.
If you're wondering, Yee first whipped up this drink in 1957. The movie starring Elvis Presley came out in 1961.
Oh, and the Blue Hawaiian is a different drink. That one's rum, blue curacao, pineapple juice, coconut cream, and then, like, maybe a spike of lemon juice. It's basically a blue and slightly citrusy piña colada. Speaking of, Dave has a riff on the piña colada at Harry's Hardware.
I'm just always trying to be progressive where we can, but only where it makes sense, I guess. So, like I said, number one selling cocktail is a slushy, so.
But it's an elevated slushy.
It is an elevated slushy.
What goes into that slushy?
So we do a 15-year blended scotch, lots of fresh ginger and lime juice added to a traditional piña colada instead of rum. So the ginger and the scotch bring the sweetness down and add that spice and a little bit more depth.
We also wanted to know about the exciting things happening in the world of spirits in Hawaii and where it's going. Chandra gave us a couple of examples.
I've found that the spirits that are made in Hawaii, the ones that are of the highest quality, are the ones that do the least to their spirit. So they really just kind of let the ingredients speak for themselves. Distilleries like Kohana, Kuleana, which is on the Big Island, they just recently launched their rums. They're both agricole. So agricole means fresh-pressed sugarcane juice versus a molasses byproduct. So I feel like the least that they do to their spirit when they're making it, the ingredient really shines through. And then you can taste it in the glass. You get that earthy, like, vegetal, grassy note. Or if they use different types of cane, sometimes it's very floral, or sometimes it's very, like, mushroomy, like umami. Like, they're all so different. But if they were to use a lot of processes in making it, you would lose all those nuances. So there is a Maui winery, and they make some pineapple wine there. I know you were kind of interested in that. And it's they do different styles of pineapple wine, which is awesome. But they use pineapple from Maui, that Maui Gold pineapple, when they're making it. We have a lot of breweries that have been popping up. We have Lanikai and Waikiki and Honolulu Beer Works and Aloha Brewing and so many. Big Island Brew House on the Big Island. So a lot of craft beers that have been popping up all around our state.
Lauren and I got to check out another pineapple-based alcohol producer, a distillery that ferments pineapple to produce their base liqueur of vodka, which they also blend and flavor to make other stuff like gin, whiskey, and flavored vodkas. It was delicious. Also, we did that tasting with, like, the most sassy old lady next
to us. She was my new best friend.
She was awesome.
She had so many opinions about everything, and they were so in line with my opinions, and I want to be her when I grow up.
If somehow, some way, you were listening, we really adored you. The distillery was called Hale'imaile Distilling Company, and the tour was really cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I was so happy that I got to try a pineapple-based product because all of the pineapple-y bits of it, you know, don't make it through the distillation. It's just the...
Right.
Yeah.
And it was cool, too, because I read in several places it described, like, a science experiment. It just has kind of that vibe of, like...
Oh, yeah, like, woo, what can we do with this?
And all these tubes going everywhere, like glass tubes.
It's cool. Yeah. Their stills were super interesting. Mm-hmm. And oh, it smelled so good because all of that just fermenting pineapple around there.
Indeed.
Chandra also spoke about an effort to bring back this this extinct native spirit of Hawaii. It's basically a Hawaiian moonshine made from whatever inexpensive ingredients folks could get their hand on. During the 19th century, historians think that the main ingredient was often the tea plant. That's T-I, not T-E-A. Anyway, by the 1960s, though, most distillers had pivoted instead to the easier method of adding tea plant extract to mainland whiskey, and the traditional product faded away. Here's Chandra.
Okole hau is something that originated, I believe that it was created by the native Hawaiians, but that recipe has basically, it's not in existence anymore. And so there are some distilleries that are trying to bring back okole hau and like do their rendition of it, but it could never be exactly what it was because I don't think that the ingredients that they use are even like available anymore.
Yeah.
So my boss actually had a bottle of okole hau from like the 1800s. So I actually got to try a tiny bit and it was so crazy. I mean, the flavors that were in it, it's like nondescript, you know? Yeah. It was like nothing I've ever tried before. It was like whiskey-ish rum, but kind of had earthy, like, tea leaf flavors. Like, it was crazy. So I think that those processes that were used to make that, like, no one knows how to do that. Or if they do, they're not sharing it with anybody else. Yeah.
And we'll end on that note of intrigue, but hopefully it's something that we'll get to try in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But the cocktail scene on Oahu is a lot more than these drinks, be they new creations or touristy classics or new creations of touristy classics. We asked Chandra if she'd ever live anywhere else, and here's what she said.
I don't think so. I have a family now, and I have two young daughters, and all of my extended family is here, and we couldn't imagine bringing them up anywhere else. Just being able to access the beach. And it's really a sense of aloha. It's so hard to summarize that in just like a word, but it's more the feeling that you get from the people that live here, the sense of ohana or family, that everyone's so interconnected. And even in the bar scene, like everyone's encouraging one another to get better, to do more, to challenge themselves. It's never about like jealousy or, oh, I want to be the best bar and, you know, we want to be super competitive. It's never like that. Like everyone's sharing their secrets and open doors, and it's really like a brotherhood, which is awesome.
So cheers. We've reached the end of another Hawaii episode, but we will be back, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, you can email us at hello@saverpod.com.
You can also find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are on those at Saverpod. We do hope to hear from you. Thanks to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard, our executive producer, Christopher Hasiotis, and all of our interviewees. Also, Don Sakamoto Paiva of Put It On My Plate, Joy Goto and Maria Hartfield of the Hawaii Visitors and Convention Bureau, and especially in this case, Michelle McGowan Rice of the Hawaii Food and Wine Festival. They put us in touch with these people, and it was an amazing resource to have.
Mm-hmm.
Savor is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
I'm sure you guys spoke with Kyle. Kohana, what they're doing out in Kunia is just mind-blowing. We actually hosted the Western Regional Conference for the United States Bartenders Guild. We had 80 of the best bartenders from west of the Mississippi. And I was the president of our guild for a long time. I did ridiculous things with these people all week. I like hiked up to a waterfall and hid champagne beneath it, hiked back down, and then brought them all back up and pretended every waterfall in Hawaii has champagne floating around in it. And then at the end of the week, they had their exit survey, and every single person said the best thing they did in Hawaii was go to that stupid rum distillery.